That's me on the podcast, sharing a song with something to say about it. With Thin Lear and Niagara Moon, losing my opinion.
Hey, Thin Lear.
Hey, man. How you doing?
I'm a little tired, not too bad.
Yeah, I feel fresh, full of energy.
Spring chicken.
That's what they call me.
Yeah. At the time of this record, your new single, Overnighter, just dropped.
That's true.
I got to enjoy that.
Yeah. You had asked me to send you that single as well as the rest of the EP, and I didn't do that.
Yeah, I wanted to get a sneak preview. You blew me off.
I wouldn't call it blowing off. But
I'd call it that.
I'm very confused these days. Uh-huh. I need to be directed to do things.
Yeah, I only reminded you a few times. It's pretty minor. But no, I'm happy to hear it as it rolls out like everybody else. I'm loving the tune. I couldn't help but think, though, you know, when are you going to write a song about me?
When am I going to write a song about you?
About me, inspired by me.
You know, that's a great question.
And what would you call it?
I would say... Let me think about that.
Yeah, sit on that one for a minute.
There's a lot to that question. I think it could go in a couple different directions, depending on my mood.
Uh-huh.
I think it would be ultimately positive, though.
Ultimately. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, if I ever get around to writing one about you, maybe I'd go with The Great Hope of Hoboken, something along those lines.
I don't live in Hoboken, but yes. Yeah.
Tie it to your Jersey roots. Yeah.
Nor do I have Jersey roots, but yes. Yeah, I think that would be good. I don't know. I mean, if I wrote a song about you, would you want it to be in my style or would you want it to be me playing your style?
No, your style. Yeah. I'd want it to be like one of your biggest hits.
Oh, wow.
Kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Like people really respond to it.
Yeah. Preferably has my name in the title.
Jeez, but, this is a lot of...
I know that sort of thing can't always be forced.
No, I think the entire thing would be forced, though, if you were asking me to write a song about you and have your name in the title. That sounds pretty forced.
Could be a bit forced. Not as much as the segue.
That's not bad.
Into what is this show?
You ask yourself?
This is the music critique. Maybe.
Are we?
Music opinion podcast.
Is it even that?
Losing my opinion. We got songs to share, things to say about them. The other person has no idea what to expect. I am Sunburn Achieving.
What?
Indie artist Niagara Moon, a.k.a. Thomas.
What did you go to? A tanning salon? How do you have a sunburn?
I was out
it's raining
in the
here.
Sun. Well, no, it was sunny on Saturday. End of March. I think that's the first for me, getting a sunburn in March. But yeah. I was outside for a couple hours, and that was enough. I didn't even realize the hemisphere had shifted enough for that to happen, but here we are.
Wow. I am sickly-looking indie artist, Thin Lear, a.k.a. Matt Longo.
You're just a bit puffy.
Have not seen the sun. Bags under the eyes. Exhausted.
Oh, man. Well, hopefully you'll perk up as this episode goes on. Wake up! So you got something to dig in today? What do you got for your segment?
Well, see, I have a great one. Let me take my jacket off here because I'm noticing...
Getting a full view.
This is going to be a very steamy episode if I don't take care of this now. Yeah, I have a heavy topic today. There's a lot here. Information, mispronouncing of words. There's a lot that's going to go on here. I hope that I am up to the task of doing this right now because this is not...
Oh, shit.
Daddy's Car Songs episode. This is not one that I phone in. I was inspired by our last week's episode where we talked about Rykooter.
Oh,
I had such a blast listening to that music. Yeah. And I thought to myself, it was so enjoyable to prepare for this episode. Wouldn't it be great if you could do that again and not have to listen to like an Ace Frehley solo album or something or whatever idea we have next? So I'm taking on a topic today. I told you to put a pin in it last week. This is basically like a part two to last week's episode.
Okay.
You said you weren't going to listen to this. I hope you haven't. I want to talk about Buena Vista Social Club today.
Oh, yay. Wasting no time. Yeah, I haven't heard any of that yet.
Let's just do it. Let's dig into it. I feel like it needed to be done immediately. You know, we delved into the work of Rykooter. We kept it pretty focused on his solo records.
Yep.
You seem to enjoy yourself. I really enjoy myself.
It was great. I flathead, fucking great.
You said I couldn't drive.
Oh, that was great.
My car was no good. This record is such a highlight for him, but it's also so not about him. And I think he's just like the doorway into it, as he was kind of the doorway into the project, I think, for a lot of people at the time. But he is very much not the center of this.
Is he in the social club?
You know, that's a great question.
In Buena Vista.
I hope that he is an honorary member of the social club. I don't know if he's in it. He's
Start me from the basics. Like, is that a real reference to something? Like, is this a city called Buena Vista and that they started at it? Like, yeah.
This is like, it's like the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost. So it's the name of the record. It's the name of the documentary that accompanies it. It's also the name of this particular ensemble of legendary Cuban musicians that I believe they named for this project. It's not like Buena Vista Social Club was like a band when they came there. They're like, hey, these guys are amazing. Sure. You know, like they got these all-star Cuban musicians together. They did their thing. And I think the stamp that they put on it was Buena Vista Social Club. And then there's a record and there's a documentary. It was organized by the head of World Circuit Records, which is a great label run by this guy, Nick Gold, British world music label. And Ry Cooder produced the record that was then tied to this documentary, and he played on it as well. But like we were saying just a second ago, like it's definitely not the Ry Cooder show. He did go on to say it was the greatest musical experience of his life, which...
oh, shit. With that saying a lot for him. He's played on everybody's
record. Really tells you a lot. And I'm not going to lie here. So like I heard about this record and the musicians, like a lot of Americans, through the documentary, the Wim Wenders documentary, before I heard the album. He says that Ry Cooder got back from making this record, which was supposed to be played. It was supposed to be a collaboration between Malian musicians, so African musicians and Cuban musicians. And he was going to like kind of be a producer on the project. There was an issue with the African musicians' visas. And so Ry Cooder is down there and they're like, all right, I guess I'll just work with these guys. And so that's how it turned into Buena Vista Social Club. So this could have been a whole different kind of like fusion thing, which sounds like it also would have been awesome, but they never did that. So then Ry Cooder gets back to the States and he's working on the soundtrack for a Wim Wenders project. I mean, he also did Paris, Texas, which is amazing. So this is another film.
It's another Wim Wenders movie.
And yeah. Wim Wenders said that Ry Cooder was barely paying attention to anything that was happening. He was just like lost in thought all the time. He's like, are you back there? Like, are you still in Cuba? And he's like, yeah, like, you know, like I'm, you know, his mind was still there. This was like a cultural phenomenon. This was definitely before my time.
So yeah, when was this? When did the guys get together and play?
This was a 90s experience. And it's like similar to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou or something, where like it didn't just create interest in the record itself. It created interest in entire genres of music, notably son, which is like blending Spanish and African elements, bolero, danzón, which I'm probably mispronouncing that, and these like relaxed versions of Cuban son and bolero called like trova and filin. Again, I'm probably mangling this, but really it turned a whole bunch of brilliant unsung artists, at least on a world stage, into megastars. So this guy, Ruben Gonzalez, who I feel is one of the greatest piano players of any genre, we're going to listen to him today. Ibrahim Ferrer, who's kind of like the crooner of the doc, and he's played in Gorillaz to bring things into your purview.
Oh, hey, now you're saying something I've heard.
Speaking your language, yeah, you probably heard him. Orlando Lopez, a mind-blowing bass player. Oh God,
you can do it.
Iliades Ochoa, singer Omara Portuondo. She has an amazing voice. Manuel Lacia, musical director Juan de Marcos Gonzalez, and Compay Segundo. I believe it's my wife corrected my pronunciation earlier. I'm trying to stick to some of that. Compay Segundo was 80 years old when they started doing this. And like, that is not, he was pretty old, but like everybody was pretty old. Like a number of these players on the record had been retired and out of the game when they came to the table here. And I remember I read a review of the record as a kid. It said something like, the concept of the album is ingenious because you just put a bunch of old masters in a room and everyone just plays their asses off and like you hit record. And like, that's kind of what it sounds like. It feels that effortless. It's just like casual greatness. And that's what I think hopefully you'll like about the record, is it just sort of unfurls and feels like a jam, but with these really beautiful arrangements. And if you haven't seen the doc, definitely go watch that.
Cool. So was it just this project was a one-off, or did they do multiple albums?
So shockingly, they didn't do like a Buena Vista Social Club Part 2 until 2017.
What? They were all still
around?
No,
almost everyone was gone. I think pretty much everyone was gone.
It was new musicians, but same sort of... Did Rykooter join at least?
No. Not too many of the folks who were part of the original were part of this, which is why it's weird that they didn't immediately follow it up. But like what happened was... It did really well. There was like, it exploded. The documentary blew the whole thing up. Cause first the record came out, people were like, oh, we dig this somewhat, but it was like music listeners were into it. Then the doc came out and then everybody loved it. It won Grammys, yada, yada. I think it was nominated for like an Oscar. And then after that, then they went on this huge world tour and then they kind of splintered into solo projects. Like, you know, Ruben Gonzalez came out with one, Ibrahim Ferrer came out with a solo record and they kind of just, they all did their thing, but there was not another ensemble experience, which is also a part of what makes it special, because it really does feel like, you know, this is a horrible analogy, but like they didn't make another six Matrixes, you know, like they just like they stuck with the one thing that was good and then they stopped.
The one and done. They knew it was lightning in a bottle.
This record sold 8 million copies worldwide, and I would describe it as like the record the world didn't know it needed. It's definitely an album America didn't know it needed. Most people, I think, when this came out at that time, did not know anything about this music. And yeah, it just, it blew people's minds.
The album cover is great. It always caught my attention. I've never heard any of the music, but I'd always see that image, the guy with the cap going down the street. I'm like, this is,
cool. It's perfect. It perfectly encapsulates the record too. Cause it's just like, you know, a nonchalant vibe, but there's like passion in the shot too. So it really does wrap up the music. The album was recorded in 6 days, and it does sound like that, the best possible way. I should also note that Joachim Cooter, Rykooter's son, was a percussionist and drummer for the band. He was like studying Latin percussion, and he was there, and Rykooter was like, hey, you should just like play. So it kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you've ever seen Alejandro Jodorowsky's Dune, like the documentary about that.
I'm in the middle of watching that, you motherfucker. Literally started. I'd seen it like 10 years ago. I'm rewatching it with a buddy. Like we just started it the other
so
night.
So good.
Yeah. In the middle of that. Yeah.
That,
so
that's
fun.
The best Dune. I think that's the best Dune film is that documentary.
Yeah. It would have taken like $1 billion to produce, but sure. In theory, in a vacuum.
It is big book.
It is the perfect Dune. Yeah.
How come they haven't come out with that book? Like I would buy that book.
I need my spiritual warriors. I had the Moebius. He's just talking about him like they're Pokemon.
These dudes. Yeah. He had...
Oban.
Yeah, man. He is funny. That documentary makes him seem both crazier and less crazy at the same time. Like, he seems like...
He is that walking paradox.
Yeah, he seems very calculated and like, okay, I'm going to unleash some crazy now and get somebody to do something. And then he's like giggles about it, you know? Like, so it seems very like controlled. But anyway, the comparison I was going to make is that like, you know, let me take my son and like put him in the mix.
He's ready.
Yeah. The boy's ready. This was recorded at the studio in Havana where all the gear was like 50s era. And mostly the record is full of like Cuban standards and some that were standards that were written by the guys who were playing on it. Like, that's how old.
It's like, all right, we had George Gershwin in the studio that day.
Right. That's essentially what's happening. So let me just shut the hell up for a second.
Jeez, yeah.
And let's listen to one of the songs on the record. And it's a song that we have to start with because it's the opening song on the album. And it's also like, people say this is their signature song. It's kind of hard to disagree with. It's an amazing song. It's not my favorite song on the record, but it's like definitely a mission statement for what's going to go down. And this tune was written by Compay Segundo, and we're going to hear a live version so you can see like the full power of the group. And something that I think you'll hear pretty immediately, and my argument about if there's going to be any connection to the premise of the podcast that we have to have an argument, I feel like this music took America by storm because it elicited emotions that were very difficult to place for an American audience. Like, you have this song feels tinged with something ominous or decidedly uncomfortable or wistful or nostalgic, but it's also confident and commanding. Like, it's this blend of emotions where it's like, I guess you could say it's sort of like a love song, I mean, lyrically, but it doesn't really sound like a true love song. it's hard to place what it makes you feel like. And Compay said he dreamed this melody in his sleep, and it kind of sounds like one of those tunes that comes from the unconscious. But I'll let you listen.
So what's the song called?
Chan Chan.
Chan Chan. So, yep, I've never heard any of this. Very excited to dig in. I do just want to check, like, what happens if I don't like this? What do we do if this isn't enjoyable?
I mean, that happens maybe half the time I bring in things I don't like. Then I just keep talking about why I like it, and you watch me do that.
Well, we'll go with that, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, whatever. It's different things people like and don't like. I mean, this is like,
sure.
I would think that you'd have a hard time like not liking it. I think it might not be for you. I don't think you're going to be like, it's just.
They're not playing it good.
It's just so musical. Like, I don't know what the fuck would be wrong with you.
Yeah.
These
guys are just emanating, musical soul. I can already tell by the still here.
It's just master musicians playing their asses off and doing so in an effortless way, and this is just an authority there that comes with, like, the years of wisdom they have from playing these songs.
So this is from the 1999 documentary. This is them playing at Carnegie Hall.
There you go.
I like the rhythm. I do, yeah. This is a good vibe.
El cariño que te tengo, no te lo puedo negar. Se me sale la babita, yo no lo puedo.
Yeah, it goes down smooth. Just Rycooter on a moped there.
Yeah, just watching Rycooter drive a moped. Yeah, I mean, it's just these like weirdly dark, groovy jams. And if you were to like sit and listen to the whole record end to end, like it takes you somewhere. And I think it takes everyone, hears something different from it. Like it's a real Rorschach kind of experience, I think, at least for Americans who do not know what is being, or English speakers who don't know what is being said, non-Spanish speakers.
Yep, that makes me one of them. I don't know what that song is about, but I like the rhythms a lot. I like the layering. I like all the different instruments. Polyrhythms probably going on in that.
I would imagine.
Some good polyrhythm action.
Well.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy it. How much... does it sound different on the recording versus when they perform live, or is
not too much? They luxuriate and the change is a little bit more live, it's a little bit slowed down live. They, groove a little bit more, but for the most part, I think it was made in 6 days. It's all live takes anyway. It's not like they're doing a whole lot of,
they're not doing synthesizer overdubs.
No, it's not a lot of synth overdubs on this. That last song is lyrically about this couple on a beach, these characters, one of them named Chan Chan. There's something sexual happening between them. I don't know exactly what, but I guess you could take it like a love song. This one is like, this next one I sent you, De Camino a la Vereda. God, my wife is going to just shudder.
We should have had her come on today.
I was thinking about that, but then it's like, I don't want her to be like the Spanish language police on the, on this show. But this one is this one is Ibrahim Ferrer singing, and he's like kind of like the bad boy of the documentary.
He's the Nate Safran of the documentary.
He's the Nate Safran. Yeah, yeah, that's exactly. That's a great comparison. He's the Nate Safran of the Buena Vista Social Club documentary. He wrote this tune. He's like, people compare him to Nat King Cole, you know, like other crooners, but I sort of hear it, but it's like, this is a whole nother thing. Like his style of singing is just rapid fire melodies throughout. And sometimes he finds a melodic line and you're like, oh, that's a hook. That's the hook of the song. And then he just never comes back to it. I've not really heard someone approach a song the way he approaches a song. Like he croons over it improvisationally. This song also, it translates to from the road to like a stretched path, which is essentially like one and the same thing. And it's like a moral warning song. Like, don't stray from your path. Don't stray from your wife. Don't do that. It's no good.
Good advice.
Yes. Yeah.
Like I'm hearing more of a West African vibe than I expected. Not scatting, but it does feel like he's just freely
trying stuff out,
riffing, but it's really smooth. Yeah.
Yeah, like what what a weird way to end a vocal phrase. You know, that sounds like that, like it's rare that I ever want a song to end on this record. You know, they could all be 6 minutes long, and some of them are, and you're like, you know, no, there was more to get to. Like, there's more you could find this jam. It's like, I dare you to drive around listening to this record and not want to keep driving. Mm. You know, it's that kind of album. This next song, this is my favorite song on the record, and it's piano driven.
This song
was written by... this is one of my favorite songs, I think, of all time. I'm not saying that lightly.
No. Is this the real shit?
For me, this is the real shit.
This is the real shit.
Like, there have been times in my life where I just can't stop listening to it. Like, there's something, it just sounds like the most fun anyone has had on record. You know, it's so hard to capture. I feel like it's easier to capture sadness on record than it is to capture fun. I don't know if anyone agrees with that, but this is like, it just sounds like people enjoying each other's company. And it's a platform for Ruben Gonzalez, the piano player. After this record came out, he got a solo record because it was so popular in the immediate aftermath called Introducing Ruben Gonzalez, which is also a fantastic album. Let's just start at the top of the song, and then I want to do a Analyze Fish thing and take us later on into the song, because there's like a real like... turning point in the tune. It just gives me goosebumps every fucking time I hear it.
Pueblo Nuevo.
New town.
Pueblo
jazzy. I think this is my favorite one so far.
Let's just ease into it, and then I'll take you to the next section. Hate to move it, but
I just want to let it play out. Yeah,
let's do it.
I like this. I'm digging this piano sound.
Take us to 2 minutes.
All right, skipping about 20 seconds here. His fist raise. Oh yeah, it's locking in now. Yeah, this one could go on for 20 minutes, like.
This guy's playing.
Let it ride.
Jesus. It's just...
Did he write this? I forget if you mentioned if it was...
This was written by the bass player, Israel Lopez Cachao.
I mean, it's a great composition, yeah. Too. It's...
But it's like, again, it's like, you know, you have like Gershwin just on the session.
Yeah. I'm hooked now. That was definitely the highlight for me so far.
He's just, yeah, Ruben Gonzalez is just a master musician. They all are. But that song has always bewitched me. Like, that is a bewitching tune. Like, I am transfixed when I hear his playing in a way that, like, you know, jaded musicians as we are, you're not always listening to the playing. You know, I always listen to the song, but, like, sometimes I'm not always listening to the playing. And with him, I just can't. Not do that. I want to close this out here with a pretty frenetic song that you might enjoy. Candela, candle. A lot of sexual innuendo in this one. Regardless,
Ooh. You
will feel the tension in it pretty immediately. Yeah, I mean, I can't say enough about this record. Like, there's a couple things. One, some people make the point that, like, if Ry Cooder hadn't stepped in and been like, yeah, this is amazing, let's go for it, then like a larger non-Spanish speaking world is not going to hear this record. I think that that's true. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. And I don't think that he's, I know like Roger Ebert, when the film came out, he was like, oh, they're spending too much time looking at Ry Cooder in the doc. They should have spent more time on other people. Might be true or not true. But I think like ultimately, like I never would have heard this record if he didn't, you know.
He's the ambassador. He's the liaison.
Yeah, he was the ambassador for it, and he didn't... I don't think he made it the Ry Cooder show. I think if you listen to the record, I think he just sort of augments very lightly in the background. And
I mean, how many people love this record and don't really know who Ry Cooder is? Like, we're not talking about a superstar here.
In some ways...
Well, Ry Cooder's attached? Right? Like, he's not freaking Brad Pitt.
Right, it's not like Elton John went down there. Yeah, like, yeah. It's just... It's not the same. I don't know... Yeah,
the Ry Cooder? No, right. He's not that kind of guy.
Right. You're like, oh, Nicky Hopkins went down to Guatemala.
Oh,
and,
no shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's people in the know obviously trust Ry Cooder's opinion. And I would say I love Ry Cooder. He's one of my favorite musicians. You know that. But in some ways, I feel like Buena Vista Social Club has sort of outlived his legacy even. Like, I think there are more people who are younger than us who maybe have heard of this record or at least would see the name of it and be like, oh, that's been on my mind, and not have no idea who Ry Cooder is, never heard the name.
I would guess that might be the majority.
Yeah.
Especially internationally, yeah.
And he did receive a $25,000 fine for violating the U.S. embargo against Cuba. but I'm sure he's wringing his hands.
He brought cigars back with him or what?
That was probably it. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we talked about this with Nicholas Kurgovich many, many weeks ago, but like, you know, it does make you think of thousands more amazing Cuban musicians that like were the same age as these folks at the time of this record who just did not get heard by the wider world. Yeah, I mean, most of these, you see in the documentary, it's like they were not living lives of opulence. I mean, it seems like they were respected as musicians, but bottom line though, like I just feel lucky that I heard this record and
it's amazing that it came together. This is, again, lightning in a bottle.
Just a bunch of accidents. And I have a hard time thinking like of a piece of music, like end-to-end album that so encapsulates the joy in being alive. Period. Like that's end of the sentence. Like what's vibrant about happiness and sadness and nostalgia and sexuality, like all that stuff in equal measure. It's just joy. Even when there's tension. So yeah, I this is one of my favorite albums. I will never be able to escape it, nor would I want to.
All right. Wrapping up here with Candela.
All locked in, you know, just everybody's just locked to shit the whole time.
Was that a cowbell? Is that what they gave Raikuter's son to play?
He might be playing that. He might. There's also a percussionist on this record. I forget his name, but he's like, he's incredible.
Yeah, you just have such an awesome, like, rhythmic bed. And on top of that, you can conquer the world.
I think it translates across everything. It translates. Like I was playing it, driving in the car with the baby the other day, and she's like into it. She's like quiet and listening,
oh,
and
yeah.
into it, and moving around and stuff. And it's just like
she's only human.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just it affects everybody. And you know, case in point, like. There was buzz around it before the doc came out, and it just needed that documentary to just push it into
the cultural consciousness
and blow up. Listen to this record when the sun is out and you're driving around. Like, just, you get lost in
you're there.
Yeah. So, Thomas, what have you been listening to this week?
Losing my opinion.
Been looking back this week, looking backwards in time. Good that you had such great music to lead this, because it's a mixed bag what I have today.
Okay. Well, you're taking on the me role now and doing like the dumbass.
No, this is fun. This is not just, this is nuance. I'm not just bringing in crap.
Like
this
I do.
Like more. Yeah, this isn't like rapping from movies.
That was a rough segment. Good Lord.
No, I'll open things up here with a question. Where were you back in 2006?
2006, like what was I listening to?
Just what was going on? You think 2006? Where does that place?
In a band with Nate, carrying.
What were you guys called again?
Sex During Wartime.
Sex During Wartime. So Sex During Wartime was in its heyday.
We were in our heyday. Yeah, we were carrying. We would. Most people would go out on Friday and Saturday night. You know, try to maybe talk to girls. We would be carrying Nate's. Like 30-pound Apple computer to the Fine Arts Building where no one was, and recording piano parts for our album.
Oh, you weren't even gigging. You were just
we were recording.
So you were in college Binghamton.
Yes.
If I recall correctly. Recording with Nate. Well, I mean, that sounds pretty dope too.
It was great. I have no regrets. Yeah.
Wait, so you were in college when I was in middle school?
I guess so, yeah.
That's odd to me. All right. Well, it sounds like a pretty good time, all things it's considered.
Great. I had a.
I was going into seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what kind of person enjoys middle school and enjoys seventh grade. I was not one of those people.
Sociopath.
Yeah, I was. So that was not as great a time for me. But that was the time that I started actively trying to discover new music. Mm. That was when it started for me. So you were in college, and I'm sure you were hip to all the new trends. So,
my taste was impeccable at that point. Much better than it is now.
I was developing my taste at this point. This was some prime iPod classic years. Mm-hmm. LimeWire was definitely
I had that too.
Heavy usage. Oh, yeah.
Trashing computers left and right.
Yeah. The big way that I first learned to find out about new music was on the iTunes Store, which I guess now it's just called Apple and it's not a store. But you remember the iTunes Store, the Apple Music Store?
Yes.
It was pretty impressive back in the day.
For its time, yes.
It was basically what Spotify is now.
It's the Spotify of its day.
Yeah, and except it had more than Spotify. Like, you'd find an album, and more often than not, there was like a really well-written, in-depth like music review right on the page mm-hmm. next to the album artwork. Mm-hmm. Even for new stuff, like you kind of get a mini introduction and so whatever the artist or the recording was all about. You got like a sense of new trends and emerging genres. It felt like a happening place in terms of like just online music outlets. So I spent a lot of time in there. Discovered a lot of music. Some of it I still am a fan of to this day. Other songs and bands I discovered around that time, they kind of fell by the wayside. You know, I'm sure you can relate.
Yeah, I have a Blessed Union of Soul CD that demonstrates that.
Do not know what that is. So we're looking back, and really what today is the 2006 indie songs we left behind.
You play like sad music over that? In memoriam.
This is a game today. There's going to be points.
Great.
Not competitive. This is just how many points can I get doing this segment with
you. That's good. I can't lose again. I really can't afford to lose again.
There's no winning or losing. There's just... There's a point system. We'll see how many points I can get. I got 5 songs to play today, and I think I should get a point if you, Thin Lear, know this song and remember hearing it back in the day, and also you haven't given it any thought in the last 10, 15 years.
Okay.
So those are the 2 qualifiers for me to get a point. No half points.
I know it, and I also haven't given it any thought.
Yeah. Songs and bands where at the time you're like, oh, that's on the scene. Maybe that's something I should care about. And then you just didn't have staying power. So I want to see how well I know you. I get a point for each song I play here where you fit this profile.
Okay. So you're casting like a fishing rod over to my college years to see if I was being attentive to what is happening here.
Yeah. Well, I want to know how well I know you, how well I have a sense of your taste.
Okay. Sure.
And this is different than when I talked about music from 2009 and, you know, trying to ascertain the sound of 2009. I don't think this music represents that era.
No, this is just iPod cast-offs.
Undoubtedly, these songs are going to sound dated to us. There is going to be something about them that reminds us of the... Maybe who knows? But because here's the thing. I'm not sharing music from bands that I kept up with or I feel like their impact like outlasted this era. Because honestly, The Sound of 2006 is fucking Young Folks by Peter Buren and John. But that doesn't count.
No, it's still...
That song is still around.
It's still like it still blows up on social media every so often. Yeah, that's just like... Who doesn't love a good whistle, you know?
So no Spoon, because Spoon stayed in the game.
You got no fear of the underdog. Yeah, they're still doing their thing.
Yeah, that's a great song. They're still doing their thing. I mean... The thing is, I didn't realize this, but pretty much all of these bands, or at least like the frontmen, are still active, like the majority. And I'm like, well, really? These past 15 years? Okay, I just didn't know, didn't pay attention. But like a lot of these guys are still at it. Let's dig into the first example.
Okay.
Let's see if I can get a point off the bat here.
Sure.
You remember Do you remember Cold War Kids?
Yeah, of course. What are you going to play me? Hospital Beds?
All right, so you're on this already. I'm not going to play Hospital Beds. I was going to pick the track We Used to Vacation.
Oh, We Used to Vacation. Yeah, I believe that's the opening song on that record. Yeah, Robbers and Cowards?
It is. Yeah. Robbers and Cowards. Have you thought about this band?
Hang Me Up to Dry.
Hang Me Up to Dry was a big fucking hit. Yeah, that got overplayed.
Yeah. No, you get a point. Yeah, this totally fits the bill. I was definitely aware of this record. I enjoyed a bunch of songs on it. I liked Hospital Beds. I think that's probably the best song on there. The first two tracks are really good. Yeah, they were like sort of like a Walkman kind of a feel. You know, like they were coming out of the Brooklyn scene, and they yeah, it had that sort of thudding kind of sound, a bit like Local Natives or something like that. You know, it's very percussive, or The National. Yeah.
Have you listened to Cold War Kids in the last 10 years? Would you say?
Nope, I don't think so. They were on my iPod Nano, though. I can tell you that.
Yeah, yeah. This album, Robbers and Cowards, from 2006, was on mine, but I deleted it at some point to make room for
City Pop.
Pretty much.
8 gig of City Pop.
Uh-huh. Can't get enough. Let's visit some Cold War Kids here. We Used to Vacation, pretty much a straightforward song about alcoholism.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I mean, once you hear the song, the lyrics, you know, sum it up pretty concisely. I think the lyrics are pretty good, pretty thematically on point. Otherwise, I'm just not into this kind of rock. And I don't think I like the singer's voice, but it's just taste.
I remember the bass player being really good. Like, it was cool timing he had.
They do have a pretty rollicking rhythm section. Mm. It's no Buena Vista Social Club.
No, very different rhythm sections they're going.
Yeah. But yeah, all right, so I get a point already. Let's enjoy the tune here.
Punch the nickels boy for taking his seat. He gets all that anger from me. Stephens could be much worse. Natural disasters on the evening news. Stephens could be much worse. We've still got our health, my paycheck in the mail. I promise to my wife.
This is the part I would always hear in the cafe.
I'd never touch another drink as long as I live. But even then, it sounds so soothing. This will blow over in time. This will all blow over in time.
Right back in it. This aged pretty well.
Yeah, no, I like it. I think you could...
Very spoony.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
I think you could put this out now and not have any issues.
Yeah. I mean, because, like, what the fuck was going on in 2006? I was in seventh grade, so I can't really remember it as somebody who really had a handle on what pop culture was, but I remember it being, like, having no identity. Like, it just seemed like a cesspool at the time that really, like... Everything was so transient. Like, once you got into the early 2010s, I feel like we hit a nice stride in like independent music for a while, like in different subgenres going on in alternative. But like, I don't understand what 2006 was. Like, I feel like the fashion was still terrible. You know, we were still in the Bush era.
No, you mean like Bush the band?
No, the president. Oh. We were like just culturally.
I thought we were talking about music. I was like, they're long.
We were way, you know, before the economic crash and everything. I feel like we were way more, and the music industry hadn't totally transmogrified or whatever yet. Like, I feel like we were just on the dying embers of like the 90s vibe.
There was still, yeah, you had like Waiting on the World to Change and Future Sex Love Sounds. And like, you know, there were still like the big, big artists doing their thing.
But I don't know. And especially in indie, I don't really, I feel like it didn't ferment until like the end of the decade, whatever the fuck was going on. It's a weird time.
It is hard to place what the vibe of that era was, yes.
Yeah, it wasn't the 90s.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, so maybe a theme here will be, I don't know, I feel like a couple of these, we'll pull them out and they'll sound pretty dated, but maybe the theme overall is there is no real sound of 2006. It was just things were still in flux. I don't know.
Well, you had TV on the Radio was doing their thing. I remember Wolf Like Me. It was like around that time, and that was probably... You don't know that song?
I don't know what that is. TV on the radio. I don't think I liked the guy's voice. I never could get into them. They lasted a little longer than their peers, right?
Yeah.
They
had staying power. Arctic Monkeys doing their thing. Beirut came out. Yeah.
Oh, Beirut. Beirut's great. I didn't include Beirut here because I feel like they're too good. They're kind of a cut
above. Well, he's just still doing it. Yeah. Yeah.
But my next pick, I'm probably not going to get a point here. You might not have ever heard of this band or this guy. The band's called Baby Shambles.
Yes. So this is Pete Doherty, formerly of the Libertines. The
I think I'm getting another point here.
Self-imploded Libertines. It's Carl Barat.
He burgled Carl Barat's apartment or something. Pete Doherty did. So he went to jail. He's all fucked up. He seems to be doing better now.
It's awesome.
He's off the drugs.
He seemed like he was going to be. He was headed down that Amy Winehouse path.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you've heard Libertines early style. Really, they only have the couple records, but I really enjoy it. It's a real predecessor to like Arctic Monkeys type.
I heard a small handful of. Because, all right, so he had the band The Libertines, this Pete Doherty guy in England. Mm-hmm. He got in trouble and formed a new band called Baby Shambles.
All he did was get in trouble.
Yeah. I don't know, like, I don't really remember. I remember this particular song or, like, the hook of this song.
All right, yeah.
I tried checking him out a little bit. I was confused why this guy was a big deal, and I kind of still am. Noel Gallagher, he is not. I feel like these guys didn't make much of a cultural impact in the States. And I feel like I'm not hearing the tunes that would have, catapulted them.
It was like,
but maybe you're saying
it's not Baby Shambles. I mean, there are a handful of tracks I like from Baby Shambles, but I think the early Libertine stuff.
So how come they're not bigger? How come we never hear about them?
I don't know. I mean, it was like, maybe they were overshadowed by the Strokes. I mean, it was sort of like similar to like, I don't know what was going on and like, where you had like Sex Pistols versus Ramones or whatever. You know, it was very much a counterpart to like what the Strokes were doing. And then you had like the second era of it with like Kings of Leon and like bands that were sort of that came in the second wave of that, of Franz Ferdinand, like that guitar band thing. But they were part of that first wave with the Strokes and White Stripes and Yeahs and all that.
And their songs are pretty good, huh?
I at the very least, I think you'd like their singles. Like Up the Brackets, right. Can't Stand Me Now is a great, great fucking song.
All right, I'll check it out. Going back to Baby Shambles here, the album Down in Albion, again, 2006, keeping up with that motif.
It was like their only record, maybe?
No, they got like three, but I barely remember anything about them except just kind of being confused with what this guy's deal was. But Kilimanjaro, I might lose my point. I don't know if you are going to know this song.
Don't know it.
Fuck. All right.
Sorry, dog. You almost had me, though. You did a great job. You just needed to pick a more popular song.
Yeah. Well, I feel like this is one of their big singles here. Kilimanjaro, I don't know. It sounds like it's almost trying to be The Clash, but just it's missing the special X factor.
Man, you got to hear What a Waster. That song is fucking great.
Right. Well, I'll check out the Libertines later, but we're still in 2006 right now. Yeah, see what you make of this. Excuse me, Pete, can you sound as drunk as possible?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the appeal.
I didn't mind. I was a money man anyway.
I kind of like this.
It's not bad, but it's just
it's not his finest work, but
it didn't stick with me. Yeah, it's doing some clever pop things that you want to do. But anything about it tie it to 2006 for you?
Yeah, it sounds like that era. Yeah. I mean, you could draw a line between this and the Cold War Kids sound. I mean, it was people with a really high level of like production that were trying to make messy music.
Yeah, they still had access to the expensive studios.
Uh-huh. Yeah, now it's really easy to make messy music.
Oh, it's quite easy. All right, well, this episode is going to get long. We got to move things along here. You knew this band was coming up. So this is going to be an automatic second point for me here.
Okay.
The band Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah.
I do not know this
band.
Are
you serious?
I know of them. I know the name. Of course, you hear it, you'd never forget it. But I don't know what they sound like. I've never heard them.
Wow. I think this is the most dated sounding group of the bunch, probably. I kind of had some interest in like the first, maybe second album, but eventually I couldn't deal with the singer's voice anymore. And that's definitely the main sticking point for a lot of people. Oh, and the song is called The Skin of My Yellow Country Teeth. Lovely. The beat, too. I feel like this was so popular back in the day to play this kind of drum beat. That's since fallen off. Just this like indie disco sound. But
oh, the indie disco. Yeah, this was the era of like, if you're going to do indie, you have to make it danceable.
Yeah, but like a dorky, like too fast danceable. Anyway, see what you make of these guys.
Okay.
That's it. That's it right there.
There it is, yeah. I like this. I'm sorry.
You like the voice?
I mean, if he wasn't attached to the music, probably not, but I feel like it works with what they're doing.
The songwriting's solid. You might want to check these guys out then. At least the first couple of records. You like that one?
I enjoyed that. Yeah, I really did. You just got 1 point though out of this whole experience. So
I've only got 1 point. I started strong and then I went too specific with the next song. And I can't believe you never heard "Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah."
It is surprising. I mean, they've been around for ages.
Well, now you know you might have enjoyed them. This next song. It's definitely my least favorite from this collection.
Wow, all right.
All that one time, I did give these guys a chance. The band is The Kooks.
Yeah, so this is... I have not listened to this band. I don't know anything about them. I put them in that same bucket as like Kasabian and like, you know, the British bands that seemed wildly popular. Yep. Even a little bit here, mainly there, that I just never caught on to. But like I heard... This band, Kasabian, there's a couple of others. A Block Party did actually, you know, make a real mark here. But even them, I don't know much about.
Yeah, my classmates in middle school liked Block Party. I mean, the songwriting's there with this song, but it's just... I realize James Blunt has nothing on these guys for annoying British accents. Like, oh, it's insufferable. Oh, I can't handle it. I can't deal. But we'll see what you think. The song's called Ooh La.
Okay.
This will probably end up being stuck in your head. It is a catchy song, but I realized I had no tolerance for the vocal delivery. Damn it. I'm 1 point and we're 4 songs in. This sucks. I don't know you at all. You're an enigma, Matt Longo.
I've been told that, yeah. Oh, they based the band name off the David Bowie song. That's nice.
Yep. Oh, yeah, yeah. Inside In, Inside Out is the name of the album. Again, 2006. Ooh la.
In their eyes is the place that you find. You discover that you love it here. You've got to stay on this rock, not a rock. An island on which you found a lover, then you twitch. You feel that itch in your petticoat. Your pretty, pretty petticoat.
Yeah.
Then you
something
smiled,
stinks.
You got wild. You didn't understand that there's money to be made. Beauty is a card that must get played by organization. But ooh la, she was such a good girl to me. But ooh la, we'll just cheer her up, spot her out.
So am I right about the vocals?
Yes. This to me, sadly, I think, sounds more of this time than any of the songs that we listened to today. I think you could hear stuff like this now pretty easily. I don't think it would take much doing.
They're really rubbing it in your face with that pretty, pretty, pretty petticoat.
Go to Hollywood.
So that was definitely the nadir of this collection. Nadir?
Nadir. Even though the Ralph Nader of this collection.
That was the Ralph Nader of this bunch. But this next and last song, I'm sure this has a soft spot in your heart. I'm hoping I at least get 2 points here. The band Tapes and Tapes from Minnesota.
So I've heard of this band. I remember, I think they were signed to XL, I believe. I knew...
Okay, you know that, but you don't know the music?
Well, because I knew the person who she ran their label. I think at the time they were doing their thing, and I was talking to her about it in like years and years and years ago. And I remember they had a cool music video for like one of their singles. That's all I know. But I have not heard this band. You have 1 point. From this shit. Experience, all this work.
Fuck.
But I have heard of them, and they do to me. Yes, like this is like just like with Kooks or whatever. Like I hear the band name, and I'm like, okay, like All Points West Festival is coming up. You know, like it feels like that time period.
Well, I'm gonna play a track from their album, The Loon. This was self-released in 2005, but again, the song I'm going to show you now, Manitoba, that came out as a single in 2006. That's when they got a lot of buzz, seemed like they were going to be the next big what have you. I guess just didn't quite work out that way. I don't think they're active anymore. They sound very homespun, and they sound very much like a using 2005 consumer-grade equipment kind of deal. Yeah, very, very indie affair here. Kind of have a charm. But again, just another group that I checked out back in the day. I think I might have even purchased this CD at the local music store. I might have gone. It had a cool album cover, The Loon. But yeah, I have no idea where that is. But song's called Manitoba. I think you'll be on the wavelength of this one. It's not really my cup of tea now, but it's a nice little time capsule.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good song. I really like that. Very of its time. Yeah. There was always, it was like a real crazily reverbed, bright ass electric guitar, just kind of lazily doing its thing. Yeah, on a lot of songs of that era, with like a thick backbeat underneath it. Yeah, like that was the combo of the time.
And warbling vocals. So you seem to like, you're responding to these groups with the
vocal warble,
pitchy vocalists. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this was the vocal fry of its day.
All right. Well, as a game, that might have been an abject failure, but I think this is...
Oh, I enjoyed it.
I had fun doing this. I learned some more about your tastes here.
I enjoyed myself. I it was nice to hear some of these bands that I were just sort of, yeah, perennially around at the time I was digging into a lot of new music. Glad to finally hear them.
And do you feel like you missed much?
Yes, because there was a lot... The thing about that era was like there were a lot of great like one-off singles and things like that. You know, you'd hear a band and it sounded like nothing else, and then you wouldn't hear anything else from them ever again. And they would get like a ton of marketing money, so it would get right to you and then they'd disappear. That was the version of the algorithm that we had then, was hundreds of thousands of dollars in marketing money from a label, but not enough for another release.
Yep. But so that was my little look back.
Walk down memory lane, iPod Nano lane.
Yeah.
Well, what did we learn today? I learned that I might actually like some of these bands that you're bringing to me. Clap your hands, say yeah. I mean, I not actively avoid them because of the name, but it did seem like a band that maybe it's not in my wheelhouse, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, if you liked what you just heard, I mean, go ahead and check out at least their first couple albums. And their name is nowhere near as bad as Someone Still Loves You, Boris Yeltsin.
Yeah, so, that's I was surprised you didn't bring them in. That's
I didn't listen to them. I saw that name, but that wasn't music that I ended up getting the CD or torrenting or whatever. So yeah. I can't speak to their music. But yeah, and I learned fucking Buena Vista Social Club, big phenomenon there.
Your segment did make Buena Vista Social Club sound even more incredible than it
even more exciting. Did. Yeah, I was like, oh, it's good that like I'm not trying to one up you. That wouldn't have worked today.
Really,
yeah.
We could listen to that whole album and just be fine. Yeah,
yeah, puts things in perspective for sure. It's April 10th. What do you got going on? What do you want to tell people
April
about?
April 10th. Hey, we got a new single coming out on May 1st. So keep an eye out for that and stream overnight or wherever you listen to music.
Excellent, excellent. And I have my third single from upcoming album, Rebuild the Circus. The third single, Rudy. Both a song and a music video, animated music video. That's dropping April 26th. And otherwise, hey, if you like the show, you want to make sure you hear more of it, go ahead and subscribe so you never miss a future episode. New episodes every Wednesday.
Wednesday.
You can follow Losing My Opinion on Instagram, TikTok, or...
X.
And this week, what did I argue? I think high-pitched, out-of-tune warbling on a rock song isn't like the best. I mean, maybe that's not your best foot forward. And I could be wrong now, but I don't even want to try to impersonate that. My throat would be out of commission for a few days. Yeah.
Well, that's a letdown. Sorry to let you down.
Should I give
folks.
You a Randy?
Look, he can't. I'll he give gives you a lot, people.
I could be wrong now, but I don't think so.
All right. Let me give you the Randy. That one, you're like, well, it's like a well-worn shoe, that impression. Yeah,
well-oiled machine.
And I'll say, so long, suckers. We will see you next week.